The following presentation from the Utah Open Source Conference, held August 28th through 30th, 2008, is underwritten by XMission. Since 1993, XMission has developed and supported connectivity, hosting, and co-location services for thousands of Utah residents and businesses. Set up an XMission account today at xmission.com. Streaming and podcast hosting bandwidth for this and many other presentations at podcast.utos.org has been provided by Tier 4. The presentation entitled Linux Media Security and Automation was presented by Brandon Beatty.
This talk will be on Linux Media Security and Automation by Brandon Beatty, who is a media and automation geek who has used Linux and OSS exclusively for over half his life. Whether that means he's old and has used it a long time or he just got out of high school, I don't know. He has worked on everything Linux, from embedded systems to superclusters, and has contributed to numerous OSS projects, local Linux groups, and software standards. He is known locally for his media geekiness as a former president of Slug and internationally for his work with Linux media projects, including MythTV, developing the first HDTV support in Linux, and his large collection of Linux media how-tos. In his spare time, he enjoys seeing sunlight and the lost geek art of socializing with non-geeks, which could be a talk in itself, maybe. So I'll turn the rest of the time over to Brandon.
All right. So to start off with, if you have any questions, I'll throw out it. Raise your hand. This is mostly going to be, it's a little bit more of an advanced class. I say that because home automation does require a lot of tinkering. There's going to be a lot of things that when you go through your automation, you're going to have questions. So if you see something that you're not quite sure about now, ask it now. A three-second question will save you 5 hours later. Trust me. So feel free. I know that the first part of the lecture, or the title, said Linux Media. I ended up needing to push that back to tomorrow's lecture. I'll go over some of the media stuff in this, but I'm mostly going to try and stay focused on what it's going to take to, you know, automate your home and what are the options when you go through to actually do the automation in your home. What's available right now? I should move to the next slide. Because truthfully, right now, automation in a home in general is a really mixed up environment. Every company, there's probably 100 of them out there, have decided to do it their own way. And there's not a solution to actually integrate everything. If you want to integrate everything, you'll realize that you're going to have to be creative and do a lot of the thinking and putting everything together yourself. So you have to get your hands dirty, like I was saying. It's going to take some work. If you can always hire it out. There's a lot of companies that will be glad to make a lot of money off of you and do it all for you. A lot of the companies that do home automation, you'll find out, strictly stay with lighting. Or they may have a couple components that do, you know, whole home audio distribution. But they're not going to make, when you hit the play button on the remote, turn off all of the other music in the room and turn your TV on. That there's some companies that do that, but you'll have to realize that every company has their own specific niche that they fall into. The automation is just automation. We'll go into security panels. That's one of the first things that people usually want to automate, and it's an easy way to do automation in Linux because tying into the security panels, most of them have an RS-232 port. So it makes doing a lot of, you know, walk-through rooms, bring lights up, easier. The contacts and relays, of course, every Linux system has a serial or a serial bus, so you can always tie into that or buy external modules that let you... Okay, you can buy a card.
I've got a main system. There's not a serial port on it.
Parallel?
No parallel. All
USB. Well, okay. Yeah.
I just got one yesterday.
There's also network hubs that you can get that actually have serial relays on them, and I'll talk about that. And, of course, we'll go into video surveillance because that's really the most often question I get is, you know, how do I do automation so that if somebody walks up to my house, I can turn on my lights without putting the Home Depot motion sensors around, and, of course, the hacking involved. So lighting. First thing, don't build your own light switch. There's a reason. There's the FCC Part 15 rules. Even if you buy them, they're still, every once in a while you hear about a light switch, even commercial, that's burned a home down. It doesn't happen often, but you know it happens, so don't do it yourself. Turn off breakers. And turn off more breakers than you think, because you've got electricians that will run two circuits to the same outlet, and I, for one, have been shocked numerous times. So I finally bought a power checker. You can just walk around with them. They're $10 at Home Depot. It'll save you a lot of time and burnt fingers and everything else. The other thing is, when you're doing automation, it's smart to at least have a friend or somebody else that can work with you, because a lot of automation requires running back and forth between checking something on a system and actually checking a sensor. So if you can work in teams, it'll save you a lot of time. Even if it's, you know, your wife and all she's doing is waving her hands, works great. And of course, with the lighting, you have to pay attention to load. A lot of the dimmers for automation will not do over maybe 300 watts or 600 watts. So when you get your chandelier, your 12-light chandeliers, it's way over the limit, and you can't dim them. Sometimes you have to go strictly to switch-based. There are switch or dimmers that go up to 1,000 watts right now. That's still not large enough for some of your larger lighting. All right, so cheap technologies to do automation. Of course, there's the clapper. It's a nice wireless. Okay, it's cheap. It works for a lot of situations. X10 has been around for a long time. I call it cheap. I had a bunch of X10. I threw out a lot of X10. There is a lot of failure rate. If you don't have filters, people that are actually neighboring homes that may have X10 can turn your lights on and off. There's only 256 different combinations of identification, MAC addresses basically, on X10 equipment, and you have to manually set each one yourself. So if you happen to pick A1 for your first light and your neighbor picks A1 for his light, there's a good chance he'll be turning on and off your light. The other problem is electric motors or power spikes that come through just, you know, normal electricity from the power company, or if you turn on a vacuum cleaner, it can turn your X10 lights on and off. Gets really annoying really fast. IR, there's a lot of different IR lights where you can just buy one switch, it has a little IR sensor, you can point the remote over, you can find those at Home Depot. They're $20, $30 for the remote and the light, so it's not that expensive. And then there's a hybrid. And the hybrid in stay-on is fairly popular right now because, one, it's inexpensive, and, yeah, sadly, $40 is inexpensive. But it uses both wireless and also the power lines. So it will attempt to send the signal both ways, and it actually has an acknowledgement. X10 and all these others don't have any sort of acknowledgement to say, yes, I got the packet, or to keep trying to resend the information to turn on and off or to a specific level. Mid-range, you've got Leviton, Control 4, and Light Touch. Leviton, you know, they're about $80 starting for a dimmer. Control 4 retails for $100 a dimmer. And Light Touch, I don't have any pricing on them. They're another local company, so I thought I'd give them a little screen time and mention them. They're a lot of the homes that you see in for sale, you'll go in and you'll see a Light Touch panel. It's a fairly inexpensive system that lets you do all the lighting. It's power line based, and it's fairly reliable too. The high-end technologies, you've got HAI, Home Automation Incorp, that's about $150 a dimmer. Lutron, they're about $150 a dimmer. And Crestron, to control six lights, you have to buy this panel that gives you your six zones and 16 presets, and it's $1,100, which, if you start thinking, you know, you have 30 switches in your house, it's going to get real expensive real quick. Thing to know about some of these is they don't always let you, you know, say go to light level 27 and allow you to actually have multiple locations with presets. Sometimes you have to come through this box and click through, which kind of defeats the point of some automation, because you want to be able to go in, hit a button or hit play and have the lights automatically dim rather than walking over to a button and selecting each light. There are presets that you can go through, so you can hit one button, but it still doesn't give you total control, and we're Linux people. We want full control over absolutely everything. So, which one? That was a Crestron panel. So, high-end cost. 30 lights, $15,000. audio-video integration with the high-end systems, Crestrons, you're looking at about $150,000 to, and that includes your home theater, all your bedrooms, getting video matrix switches. That's pretty much as, about as high-end as you go. That's what, you know, the people making six, seven figures will install. Security system, that means, you know, all of your switches, your motion sensors, your glass break sensors. People in the high end will spend about $10,000. Miscellaneous, that includes, you know, all the wiring, your structure wiring. If you want driveway sensors, if you want, you know, the pool out back to have some sort of, you know, temperature sensor or be able to control the temperature from inside. So high end, you're looking at $225,000. Yeah, expensive. So let's go to mid-range. 30 lights, $4,000. Not too bad, but it's still kind of a killer. Audio-video integration, you're still going to do about $20,000. And that includes maybe like a couple 400 disc changers, your audio-video switches, projectors, you know, everything that you're going to need to actually do all the audio-visual in your home. Security, to do your house, you'll spend about $2,000. Some of that may mean you only do the window sensors on the first floor, you don't do the second floor. You don't do every single interior door, which is great for automation because you know when people are opening and closing doors. And there's a lot of cool things you can do with that. Miscellaneous, $3,000, so $29,000. Still a lot, but not too bad. Next, the cheapest cost, $1,400. This would be going the InStayOn route, basically. Your audio-video integration, a matrix switch, maybe a home theater PC, you know, something you put together yourself. Security system, $600. You know, that's just your basic couple motion detectors, your exterior doors. Miscellaneous, there's a lot of miscellaneous stuff. Wiring, the connectors, so about $4,500 total. Still expensive, but unfortunately, that's about as cheap as you can get. So what do I do? I basically think a lot of people should consider what I call the smart Linux mid-range cost, which means get a bunch of InStayOn lights. Get, you know, build your own Linux PVR. Get a matrix switch if you want to be able to send that signal to different rooms. I should ask, how many of you people know what a video matrix switch is? Okay, so a video matrix switch basically is you have inputs and outputs, and those can be audio and video. So say a 4-4 audio video matrix switch is you have four inputs and four outputs, which lets you take four devices, your PVR, your say your cable box, a DVD player, and a Blu-ray player. And the four outputs, you could have it running to your theater, your master bedroom, your living room, and your kitchen. And then you're able to select between each one of those different sources and get any one of those in any one of the rooms. Video matrix switches start off about $1,500, but for a 4-4, you can go up to, say, a 16-16, which will run you about $20,000. They're a great way to get your information from one place to the other without having to have duplicates of everything. But there's also other ways you can save that. If you do a Linux PVR, like Myth TV, you can just have front ends in each of the different rooms, bring in all your cable channels over that, and Myth will stream it out over your standard Category 5 network cable rather than, you know, five pair of structured wires that you have to run. You can also do a lot of stuff with Myth wirelessly, so you don't have to retrofit. You can just put in like a 54G, and you can still get all of your television and everything streamed wirelessly as long as you have a good router with enough power in it. Security, $500 will actually buy you about 10 motion sensors, 40 window sensors, and 40 door sensors, and then another $100 for the wire to run all those. The smart thing is knowing where to buy stuff. If you're going to do home automation, I highly recommend you go get a business license and you become your own integrator. The reason is some of the prices when you go in, there's a company called Arlinco. You can buy all the equipment, including speakers or video, you know, some of these devices, for a third of the price of what you can get it on the retail market. So start your own business. Speakers, if you want to do whole home automate or whole home audio distribution, instead of paying $120 a speaker per pair, you're paying $40 per pair. There's certain, you'll find a lot of companies will run specials certain months, certain things will be on sale. A motion detector at cost is $12. If you go and buy it through somebody, they'll charge you $100 per motion detector to install it. The retrofits of the wireless motion sensors are wonderful. The only downside is you have to change the batteries every year or two. If you can get in and do any structured wiring, I highly recommend it. It's a little bit harder, but you've got the reliability and you're not having to change batteries all the time. So miscellaneous, your connectors. So you're about $7,500 to do a full automation of your whole home, which compared to the other prices is a pretty good deal. So budget, how much can you spend right now? Everybody has a budget that, I want to stick within that. The sad story is you probably won't, and you probably won't be able to do what you want for the price. So just kind of be aware of that. So if you can't meet your budget, what can you do now, and what can you add as you go along in the project? There's a lot of things that can be added after. The most critical thing is, with your security system and any, if you're building a home or wire it, get Category 5 wire everywhere in your home. Run all of your 2-wire or 4-wire for motion detectors beforehand, before you finish the basement. It'll save you a lot of time. If you're thinking about saving your basement or finishing your basement and thinking about doing home automation, do the home automation on the first floor, then finish your basement, even if it means putting your basement off another year. You'll most likely be glad you did that in the long run. Is it less expensive to do it yourself? There's very few things that smart people, geeks, can't figure out that an integrator already knows how to do, or somebody that puts in it a security system. I fixed many security systems that other companies have put in for people that the wiring's bad. You'd be surprised on how much people end up paying and the quality of work that they get out. So I'm saying do it yourself. There's a lot of things that it's really easy. If you can turn a screwdriver and run a wire and read instructions, that's about all you need. And of course, where can you cut your corners and save costs? There's a lot of things, like I was saying, you can add later. So how are you going to do this? You want to hack in, you want to buy some switches, maybe you want to buy a system that's currently out there and get things that don't work under it to work under it. A good example is I brought some old, these are some really old automation devices. So this will actually control everything in your house. It controls your lighting. It has input outputs on the back for serial relays, contacts. It also will display the different information about your house on screen. Now, some devices will run Windows. Some will run Linux. Some will run, a hybrid Wind River embedded OS. If you can get any information online, a lot of stuff for home automation is proprietary, but there's a lot that aren't. And finding out the ones that aren't, if you really want to get in and hack and, make it recognize who's walking up to the door, you're going to want to go with a company that has open or standards that you can reverse engineer, something that you can sniff on a wireless network. You need to also know, how are you going to interface with your different devices? Can I talk to an IR? Can I talk serial? RS-232? Can I talk IP? Do you have to use, standard? Are there standards that you can actually use that pre-exist that everybody's adopted, or are you going to have to reverse proprietary information? And of course, the last thing is, can you monitor? And what I mean by that is, is there a way to tap into the signal? If it's, serial-based, you can always get a serial scanner. You can see the ones and zeros. You can copy the codes, and then you know what they are, and you can always send them back and do a replay-type situation. If it's IR, there's a lot of IR detectors that you can actually capture the signal. You can build or buy devices under Linux that will send the IR signals out. And IP, as long as it's not an encrypted stream of packets, you can always sniff it. You can always see what they're setting in the different packets, and you can always do replay attacks or modify things. Okay. So basically, you need to get your hardware, you need your tools, Ethereal, Wireshark, you need your programming. Nice thing about doing some of the automation is it's really easy to write one script or that, say, does one specific thing. You can make a call into that over a web server with the LAMP, trigger things, and actually have it go back, maybe send signals out to a device, Crestron, and tell it, hey, the light switch went to this, and try and emulate the either a door opening or light switch to basically keep the state updated in your controller box. And I'll explain why in a minute. So there's... I'll mention something really quick. Let me see which slide it's in. Okay. The biggest home automation software tools that are out there right now that I would say are in the Windows world, you have what's called Lifeware. Disney Innoventions, they've gutted that whole thing. They put in what's called the House of the Future. And the entire floor is going through touching touch screens, changing light levels, playing around with stuff. Lifeware is built on the Windows Media Center. Media Center was designed and developed to be the Windows platform, and then everybody can kind of plug in all their different modules into it. The nice thing is you will start to see certain standards. Lifeware works upon, say, the Z-Wave, which is a wireless communication. So everybody has to talk the same standard in order to communicate. So if you go with Lifeware, there's a lot of devices that you're going to be able to control. You won't have to deal with, you know, IR reversal, serial reversal, replays. You can do pretty much everything by IP. You can query the entire environment, get a whole dump of all the information about every switch, every device that's in there, know every state, and you can then go back and be able to set certain states in there. The ones under Linux, there will be a presentation tomorrow on Linux MCE. The way it works, unlike current Crestron Control 4, is everything is actually on that Linux box. But if you have, say, a Lutron system and you change the lights in the Lutron, you will not get the update on your Linux MCE. So you'll bring up your current room and it'll tell you the light's off, and you're going, well, the light's on, and I hit play, and it thinks the light's off, so it actually never dims it. So you're going to have to figure out, am I going to create my own entire environment, manage it myself, or am I going to tie into one of the other environments? And if you, and I highly recommend that you try and tie into one of the other environments, unless you really want to spend several hundred hours creating your own automation environment, that you manage all the states of all the devices, you set everything, basically you have to create what everybody spent a couple of years doing. It is possible you'll get exactly what you want. You just have to realize it's going to take a lot more time. If you go with, say, a Control 4 or an AMX system, can you query individual devices? Crestron, you can, but you need a developer's IDE, and they will not sell it to just anybody. They are very limited on who gets it. So you can do Lifeware. Lifeware is really easy. You can do other Control 4. I won't speak on it. I have Control 4 in my house. I actually have developed for Control 4, my own devices for my own company. But there are ways that you can set absolutely everything you'd want. I will mention there is a Google Summer project that somebody happened to put Wireshark on the network when he was controlling his Control 4 box and started realizing, hey, this is all XML. And he actually found that just about everything that you would ever want to control in Control 4 is able to be controlled over packets and sending XML to the device. So that's kind of a hacker's dream. It's Linux. There aren't as many devices under Control 4 as there will be for Lifeware. And I'll explain why in a minute. So how do some of the different devices communicate? Well, Lifeware uses UPnP heavily. If you put in a wire or a router, it'll Lifeware and Windows Media Center will notice that you added a router. Some of the routers that are coming out will actually hook right to your television. You can stream YouTube. You can check news feeds actually right from your router. Netgear has some. Linksys has some. They're actually really cool, and they're getting to the point where they can do 720p. They're hoping to do 1080i and 1080p really soon, which opens a lot of doors. XML streams. Is there a way that you can capture data that's going over the network? Can you plug into it? Can you write a plug-in? Crestron is kind of more of a plug-in type system. And other. And what I mean by other is if you know somebody that works for a company, you're probably going to find out internal things, or you may just happen to get, you know, an SDK. So when you're trying to figure out which system you get, who you know is going to play an important role, because it may save you costs, you may get discounts on hardware, you may have help when you run into problems, you may have access to tools that other people don't, and if the company goes bankrupt, there's a lot of things that can happen. One, you're replacing everything. There are a lot of home automation companies that have gone bankrupt and will go bankrupt. Or two, you may be able to pick up a lot of hardware really cheap. They may open everything when they go out, or you know the whole project, or you may just get all the tools. Things to think about. Master guess, this is what I was explaining. I jumped ahead of myself. Do you want to do your whole automation environment, or do you want to try and interface with somebody else's current environment? What I will say is on guest, meaning you actually integrate with somebody else, there's a lot of things that automation equipment won't do. One of the things that I wanted was when I went away, I wanted to have a predefined schedule of, you know, turn these lights off, random light on and off, and choose between these five lights and turn it on and off during these certain times, leave it on for a certain amount. The schedulers in automation are a joke. You'll hate it. You can write a five-minute script that is 100 times smarter than anything you'll get in automation software to do random things or do specific things. So, yeah. Okay. Talked about reverse engineering. You're going to have to write code, test it. Testing is a big thing. What happens when the power goes out and comes back up? Is your environment able to detect where everything's at, or does it have to wait for the next button to be pushed before it actually knows what state it's at? That becomes a real big issue if you're ever out on vacation and the power goes out, or you have a brownout, or you're just doing, you know, testing. If the system happens to crash or reboot, how difficult is it going to get back into the environment that you wanted? And the biggest thing in the end is you want to be able to enjoy it at the end. So keep that in mind. Okay, so here are some of the... HAI is highly proprietary. They have some really cool things. They have speech recognition. So you can say, you know, Hal, turn on the lights in the master bedroom, and it knows what you're saying. HAI is the furthest along for that type of technology. You've got Lutron. One other thing I'll mention when I see Lutron right here is one of the big... There are IBMs and Microsofts in the automation world. They have more patents than you would ever imagine. And there are huge patent wars. If you hit a dimmer, Lutrons are the only ones that are able to blink as it increases the volume or increases the brightness. They have sued everybody that has put anything out there to do the same thing. You know, changing colors on LEDs. The LEDs down certain size. All these really stupid things get patented. And there's a lot of patent gorillas that really have stifled innovation, have patented things, but it's been 15 years later and we still haven't seen anything. And that's why if you want to do some of the automation, you're going to have to do it yourself, because other companies will not be able to do what you want to do because of patents. So OSS tools. Insteon has a huge collection of open source tools. It's very easy to interface with. HAI has a few tools for specific things. And the reason is HAI works a lot with disabled people. And the disabled, there's different organizations that actually fight for rights and standards. And the government leans really highly upon these organizations. So when they request things, the government has had in the past a really good... or has put out really good support for forcing companies like HAI to actually open up specific things if they deal with disabilities, such as the tools for opening doors, controlling lights. But if you get into the more specific things like the voice recognition, you won't be able to touch any of that in HAI. Crestron has some tools that you can interface with. Crestron goes into a lot of schools. I have no doubt it's all over the campus here. And a lot of the students have to do the programming. Each room has to be programmed, and it takes maybe 5 to 10 hours to program every room if they're unique. And because of that, a lot of schools want open source tools, and they're writing open source tools and interface. Control 4, there's been apps that are released that sit on a web server that let you turn everything on and off in your house. It queries the entire environment, automatically generates a list of all your devices, and you can go and click all your states. So if things like that exist, you know it's going to be easy to either write your own tools or interface. Control 4 and their new version came out with something called C4 Lua, which is just Lua. So you can actually have your own programming language and write any driver you want, which is pretty cool. And then, of course, LifeWare, just because it is a Microsoft technology, but they're trying to really get their foot in the door, and because of that, a lot of things are open right now, and there's a lot of things that you can create. X10, everybody was really familiar. If you had X10, you probably bought one of the little firecracker devices that plugged into your serial and let you control all your X10. So Mr. House, Pluto, Linux MC, all were able to do those. And I will say really quickly, Mr. House became Pluto, and Pluto gave out about, I heard yesterday from Barry. Is he here? No, he's not. He's doing the Linux MC. They gave away 90% of all of their automation, which has now become Linux MCE. And they gave that away to the open source community. And stay on. Linux MCE can handle and stay on, so you know there's already tools out there that are going to be OSS friendly. And there's a lot of tools on SourceForge for controlling the and stay on. Z-Wave. Z-Wave is a wireless technology, and so is Zigbee. They're competitors. I'll show you really quickly the difference between the two. But Mr. House and Linux MC work heavily with Z-Wave. Zigbee, there's the Google Summer of Code project and other devices or other things out there. Both these are an open standard, but a lot of the companies are trying to close them off. And the reason is there's absolutely no security. A lot of companies say, you know, our devices are secure. You can't get into the system unless you're registered. It's not what they say, unfortunately. If you can go buy a Zigbee radio and see every single packet, and you can replay events, and you can do all sorts of things. So if you're ever thinking about doing automation, also realize that you're opening up your house likely to anybody that wants to cause problems. So Z-Wave, Intel is backing it, Panasonic, DSC, and LifeWare. There's over 100 other companies, partners, that are in the LifeWare or in the Z-Wave technology. So, you know, frequency 90842 in the U.S. has a range of about 100 feet and 9.6 kilobits per second to 40 kilobits per second. Not fast. So how about Zigbee? Not much better. So there's about 30-plus companies. Simmons, AMX, and Control 4 are the biggest ones that I'll mention here today. There's multiple frequencies depending on, what device. Control 4 uses 2.4 gigahertz. That can be problematic. They do have different channels that you can select, and there is one channel that is outside the range that routers use, so most people end up using that. The range is a little bit better. You've got anywhere from 33 to 246 feet, and the bandwidth is slightly better, 20 kilobits, 40, and 250 on the max end. The frequencies relate to the speed. So 2.4 gigahertz is where you get 250 kilobits. So what can you use the wireless for? Well, you can use it for lighting, contact relays, extenders, and that's pretty much it. You're not going to be doing video. You're not going to be doing audio. and you're not going to be surfing the internet on it. IP, well, this is better. You can do video, you can do audio, you can do all your lighting, you can do your security. IP, of course, the only thing you can't do are serial IR and RF, different technologies. So IP is the way to go if you're going to be hacking your own automation system. Serial is still critical because it's how you tie into a lot of the security panels. Your receivers, the high-end receivers, some of them are coming out doing IP, but a lot of them still just do serial. And that becomes key. So if you have a remote like this, you're either, you know, hitting TV, turning it on, hitting my receiver, turning it on. Everything's manual. Or you can go out, buy one of these for $50.
You use that a lot.
Yeah. And you can actually program, you know, macro. So you can control 15 different IR signals. Still, the downsides of both of these is you cannot control something in a different room, or you have to point it at the devices. So this one has, you know, multiple IRs that shoot off in different directions. They're high power, so hopefully they bounce off all the walls. These still will not learn every IR signal. I used this for a while, and I actually captured signals from my IR keyboard so that I could, you know, bind play to my Myth box to make Myth play. There will be some keyboards that you can't learn IR signals on. This is a Control 4 remote. It's RF, it is RF, it's Zigbee. And the nice thing is about some of these technologies, this is a Control 4 dimmer. It has Zigbee in it, so if you have a remote and you have a bunch of these in your house, it is a mesh network, so it will jump from one to the other. And the nice thing about Control 4 Crest on some of the different ones is they take care of all the bindings. So you can actually say, I have a room, and in this room I have a receiver, and I have a TV, and I have XYZ. Well, you click on the TV, it shows you all the outputs for your specific model. Well, you say, I have this type of model of TV, this type of receiver. So you click on your TV, shows you all the outputs. You click on, say, the video or the audio output, the optical. You click on it, in the bottom pane, out pops all of your different devices that are in your project, in your home, and you can just drag and drop that in the receiver. And it knows exactly what it's going to have to change on what device in order for you to, say you come to like TV, you hit the TV button. It takes care of setting absolutely everything, which starts to get really nice because you can't do that with your other remotes. Weather stations, you're still controlling those by serial. Your display devices, some TVs, a lot of the new ones have serial in them. None of your TVs really have IP and let you control it by IP. What you end up doing for a lot of televisions is the companies will have, you know, little ports on the back that have IR transmitters. So you take one of these wires from one of these devices, it's usually at, you know, every TV, and you stick it out on the front of the TV, and it has self-sticky tape, and you basically put it over the IR sensor. And that's how you turn your TV on and off, and it doesn't know the state. Higher-end TVs will have serial, so you can actually query the state, turn it on and off, turn it to a specific channel without, you know, a lot of problems. You run into a lot of IR signals don't always get there. It can be problematic. Disc changers. Disc changers are anywhere from $200 to, you know, $500 for like a 200 IR disc changer where you have to do everything by IR. It's about $500 for a 400 disc changer that's serial based that lets you, you know, go to a specific movie. And companies like Crestron and Control 4 will have all of that built in. So you put in your disc, it'll actually read the tag identification. Okay, I can't think of it right now. Send it back to the automation. It'll do the lookup for all your movie information, populate its own content. So you can actually take one of these, hit videos, say, show me all the videos, and scroll through this. And on the display, you see all your movies, and you can hit play. And all you've done is just put the disc in the changer and gone from there. Your thermostats are still all pretty much serial-based if you want to control the temperature in your house. A lot of companies have their own wireless ones, so you just pop your current one off, pop on a new one. It's wireless. It integrates with the control system. Or you can create your own custom circuits. IR, you still, if you're planning on doing any automation for blinds, they're all IR. Your TVs and a lot of the remotes, you may be using IR. Ceiling fans are always RF. Blinds can also come in RF. TV, some of the newer TVs are going away with IR and going to RF. That makes automation a little bit more difficult because nobody really creates an RF transmitter. So luckily, too many haven't done that. It's something that if you go out buying a TV and it's RF only, just be aware that it may be difficult to integrate into a control system. Resources. So you want to pick a technology with potential if it's a life or a long-term project. Will intellectual property holders help or slow you down, like I was mentioning earlier? Will, you know, if you release a tool under, you know, GPL and it's one that contains a patent that Lutron has, are they going to slap you with a DCMA? Are they open protocols that you can interface, Z-Wave, Zigbee? Are they Linux hacker friendly? Also, you can't dim that way, we own that method. I will mention, under Lifeware and some of the others, you may not have, if it's kind of a plug-in system, they can't guess what every type of option will be on every type of device. So you may only have a low, medium, and high. So you may not be able to get the exact light level that you want with some plug-in systems. It's just something to be aware of. There's plenty of information online. You just have to look for it. You just need to know that that can be something that can come back and bite you. Okay, make lists. What do you want to control now? What will you want to control in the future? It's always fun to at least throw in one geek project when you're doing it. I personally, I've integrated my house, so I put motion sensors in every room. Every door has a sensor on it, even closets. When I have kids, I figure if I have two girls and they fight over who stole their clothes, I know who was in the house when the door opened and closed. I have motion sensors, like I was saying. So at night, I actually never touch a light switch. I walk around the house, all my motion sensors. When I installed it, I knew where they would be pointing, and I mapped everything out carefully and tipped them in such ways so there's no double coverage, and they mark specific zones. So I can walk through as I walk down a hallway, lights will turn on depending on the time of night. If it's, you know, 2 a.m., it's only going to turn it on to 30% instead of maybe like at 7 o'clock at night when you need the full brightness just to kind of even things out. Costs. Some people say, you know, if you automate your lights, you save money. No, not really. These light switches are about 5 watts each. And if you have, you know, 30 of them, that's 150 watts. Not really. And that's the other thing. Compact fluorescent are enemies to automation. They're tough to dim. You can get dimmable ones. The life is questionable. I personally don't like compact fluorescents because of the color. I don't like the flicker in them. And they're a health hazard. If one actually breaks, it has mercury in it, and you're supposed to open the windows and leave the room for a day. And if you look at the warnings, and they're just something that they're not automation's friend. One thing to know with incandescents, if you dim them just by, you know, 20%, you will actually increase the life of it maybe 40-50%. If you only use a light at 50%, you may get 2 or 3 times the length out of the bulb. And also not having the hard on, hard off. You will find that some lights that were made badly will burn out faster, and other ones that were made really well will actually last many, many years, far longer than you ever would have expected. In my house, I had 5 go out within the first week, but I can also blame that new house. I had like 100 new light bulbs, and I haven't replaced a single light bulb since I moved in, besides the ones that first went out. So I think it's pretty good. All my lights are slow on, slow off, especially at night. When I'm walking around the house, it's not like dead on 20%. It's, you know, slowly ramps up and down. Which, no, the tough thing with LED light bulbs is they still don't have the same amount of lumens as you get. A standard, say, 60-watt light bulb will have, say, 600 lumens. The LED lights replacements only have about 1 to 200, 300 if you're lucky. So right now, I will switch from incandescent to LED once I can get the same number of lumens out of it. LEDs also, you know, they're more directional, and in some situations you don't want directional light. LEDs work better for spots. Yeah, they're getting better. I personally am going to wait a number of years until I spend the money. They're really expensive too, and I've had a hard time justifying it. So. What's that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's also some other technologies besides LED that are coming out that are really interesting. Did you have a question?
No.
Okay. So I think I would recommend waiting at least a couple years if you want to look at LED, unless you really want to be on the bleeding edge. But you may find your money a little bit mismanaged. That's just my personal opinion. So as I was mentioning earlier, how do you distribute audio and video? I'm going to have to move quick. Okay, so as mentioned, you have the matrix switches, or you can do, you know, a different media box in each location. Use Myth TV. You can have a back-end that stores all your movies, and you can watch everything remotely. Radio, if you want to do distributed radio, you need to look with a company that actually creates their own, say, 16-channel amp, and they usually have like 8 inputs and 16 outputs. So you can send it to 8 different speakers because you've got stereo. And if you want to do the distributed audio, just about every automation company has their own device that they work with. Some of them will do radio. Some of them will do internet radio. Look around to all the different ones. Some devices, you can actually pull up IP cameras on this now. So if somebody knocks on your front door, you can click through and look at an IP cam. I've hacked mine to actually bring up analog cameras. I mentioned some of this earlier. Okay, so weather stations. Why I say what not to do, don't do anything based on weather unless you just want to see status. If you have a dream about lowering the blinds or, you know, turning off the sprinklers, let the sprinkler system do it. It works well. I wanted to integrate my sprinkler system, but the cost of it is ridiculous, and it's just not as reliable. So you have to think, what is actually going to be reliable? I had some windows in my living room that I get the sun in every night, so I thought, you know what, I'll hook up something that, you know, if it's 5 o'clock, then lower the windows and bring it back. Well, after finding out that just basically a 10-foot by 10-foot blind is $5,000 for the motorized ones, and then finding that I'd have to rewire because they use proprietary stuff, so I'd have to do my own control system, own circuits that basically try and tie into theirs. And then the fact that, and I thought, okay, well, I'm still fine until I found out that in a 10-mile-an-hour wind, you've got to lift it up. And I'm in Saratoga. We get 50-mile-an-hour winds fairly regularly. So I was like, okay, well, I'll put in a weather station. And then I started investigating the weather stations, and they're just not reliable enough. And it was something that I really wanted to automate. It was going to be, you know, my kind of geek project, and I had to basically abandon it. But if you want to look into it, OneWire is what you want to look into. It's supported under Linux. There's a lot of tools out there. It's called OneWire because you've got one wire that runs up that does all the communication through. So I've only got a few minutes, so I'm going to quickly, I'll show you. Okay. Just some of the different technologies. So we've got Crestron stuff that I was talking about. You know, you've got to plug into all their ports. It may not have all the outputs that you want. A lot of this is finding out what equipment you want before you actually do your integration, and then seeing if everything's going to work together. And you may have to jump companies if you can't do what you want. AMX, see, they're interesting things. Some of these keypads, if you want one in every location. You'll find some companies have tons and tons of different designs where, like Control 4, you get this, and the switch looks the same, and then they've got a 3-button with 3 buttons, or you have a 6-button that has 6 buttons. That's it. You don't get sliders or anything else. Lutron owns a lot of the patents on the sliders. That's why you don't see anybody else doing it. Some companies have, intercom systems. Crestron has it. Control 4 doesn't. Other things to consider. I personally did voice over IP phones and asterisks in every room. The phones are, $60-$70, and you can do a lot more with that in hacking than you could ever do with putting an intercom in each room. So HAI, they do, like I said, a lot with disability. So you've got your dimmers, your lamp modules, your switches, your scene stuff. They give you plugs that, you can plug just about anything into. Some of them are dimmable. Control 4s, like I said, these are their products. That's it for lighting. Their audio video, Control 4 does a lot more in audio video. They actually sell their own stuff. These are, you can buy a multi-tuner that has multiple FM stations. You can get Ethernet speaker points where you can just plug an Ethernet cable and stick your own amplifier on there and get audio to any room. It's great for retrofit if you want to do home audio. Here's a Sony a video switch, and I'll just show you what one of these looks like. So you have basically all your audio inputs and outputs for your different zones. And I can't read. Okay, so source 1, source 2. So this has 8 sources, or 12 sources. And then you've got wiring out to all the different zones. I will mention 2 real quick. You can do just about anything over Category 5 wiring. You can do audio, you can do video, you can do your IR. So if ever in doubt, just run 1 or 2 Cat 5s to a room, and you can use it for almost anything. Somebody's made a device that, it talks Ethernet between them. It does power over Ethernet, too, at times, but you can still send video over Ethernet and audio over Ethernet. So. What do you mean between the wiring choices? There is. The longer you run the wire, the more benefit it comes to actually turn it into digital before you transmit it. With the cameras that I was going to mention, this is a 100-foot strand of just regular analog. I can show you pictures real quick. So if I click on that, which one is it? Let's try the other one. Okay. Oh, that should be it. All right, this was working earlier. Video quality. Oh, there it was for a second. I'd say if you're running over 100 feet, you need to look at turning it digital before you send it. Otherwise, you start losing quality. If you're doing automated or distributed audio, don't get the cheap wire. Go get the ones that are actually rated. There's a reason it's rated. Some of the just clear coat wire for speakers puts off fumes if there's a fire. It also goes bad within a year or two. The structured wire, you may be paying double the cost, but the browser crashed. It's worth it. You also still need to figure that in 10 years, 10 to 20 years, you'll want to replace all your audio wiring, which makes a big difference for how do you install it. Always make sure you've got access panels if you can. So this camera, you notice, it's still relatively quick for pickup, and it's also... the clarity is really clear. If I were to show you, let's I wonder how I can emulate this. What is it? Closed caption, CCT? Is that right? That's probably better. Most analog cameras, for instance, are... All right, where am I going to find it? These cameras, this one and this is 640 by 480. This is 1280 by 1024. Actually, this will probably work as good as anything. Well, actually, I got a better idea. So that's the type of quality that you'll get with an analog camera. It's not very good. You get a lot of blotchiness. These are all interlaced. The longer you run the cable, the more problems you have. A good camera, I've got some that, you know, they're several hundred dollars, a couple hundred dollars, that actually do, you know, zoom. You can control the focus. That have IR on them, and it's still not anywhere near the same quality that you can get from a network camera. This one's indoor only. This is outdoor. A couple things I'll mention really quick with the security cameras is one thing you want to get as wide of an angle as you can. If you can get fisheye, it's all the better. A lot of the cameras are designed to have a focal view of about 10 feet wide, 20 feet away. And if you're putting these up on your house, you can't really see around or see right below it, or you're putting them all over. My house, I have 13 cameras, and there's still a couple spots that I can't cover yet. And that's why I've started looking into, well, it's coming apart, these, because if you look, the lens on it is curved. So you actually get more than, say, 60 degrees of an angle. You can get up to 120 or wider. If you're doing outdoor cameras, this one actually is a pan tilt zoom camera. It's completely static. What it does is, as I was mentioning, it has a 1280 by 1024 if you take the whole picture. But if you set it for 640 by 480, it digitally just looks at different areas of the picture, corrects from the lens shift and everything. On the if you're going to be doing I'm about 30 minutes short on my presentation. I was going to show you how to set everything up. If you're interested in setting up security cameras, come talk to me after. I'll explain some of it. Yes? Yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah, thanks. I should have mentioned that. I'll take questions here real quick, and if you have other questions, you can always come up later. Any questions? All right. Yeah.
So the digital camera right there, what's the brand of that one?
Oh, this is Axis. Axis is pretty well known for they produce really good cameras. They're also really expensive. This camera is, I think, $250. This one is about $700. Your analog cameras, this one I shopped around. I was going to show you. On analog cameras, I'll get to that in one second. Let me jump back. If you're going to do analog, the thing to know is you'll buy tuner cards that look like this. So it's basically just BTTV chips, and it'll say maybe 8-port, 8 captures, or some of them will say 16-port, 120 captures. I got one of these cards. I am not happy with it because what happens is as you start to add up multiple cameras, you can, as long as you have, it has four chips that each do 30 frames a second, hence the 120. If you start stacking multiple cameras on the same chip, you can get four per chip, which is how you get 16. Your frame rates go from 30 frames a second. You add one camera, or you put two on it, you actually go to about 7 frames a second. You add a third camera, you go to 3 frames a second. You go to 4 cameras, you're about 2 frames per second. And then the other thing is, if you've got some of these chips, if your cameras aren't synced up exactly, you'll get interlacing. So you actually have to wait a second between capturing. So your frame rate on 4 cameras is actually less than 1 per second. That takes a huge impact. I don't like it. And that 1 second doesn't always work. Whereas you can take some of these Axis network cameras and capture 1280 by 1024 at 30 frames a second. If you're going to do less than, say, 8 cameras, I would recommend going network-based. You don't have to deal with running wires back to the card on every run. Your video quality will be better. You maybe only have to run it in and plug it into a hub in the network or hub in your attic rather than having to string every single cable back to a location in the basement. Other things to note on cameras, if you get any that have a plastic lens, I was going to bring one. Let me see. I'll show you one real quick. Analog dome. These dome cameras are kind of nice because you think you can't tell which way it's pointing, but if you look at it closely, you can see which way it's pointing, and they're also plastic. So after about 5 years, it's going to kind of turn junky. That's why if you go with something that's glass, this has glass on it. This is called a bullet camera-ish. And it has IR on it. So different IRs will send out anywhere from 20 feet to 100 feet. Some people prefer to get, you know, regular cameras without IR and put IR spots in their yard. The benefit of that is the bugs get attracted to IR. Also, if, you know, I have to clean, mine are mostly all this. I've got some dome. I've got some of these. I have to clean these every 2 or 3 months because you'll get a fine layer of dirt on there from storms, humidity. And when the IR turns on, since the IR is right by the capture, you just get white because it hits the dirt and reflects back into it. I still like these just because I didn't run any wiring to put IR spots all over my yard. And I'm really not too disappointed. A lot of people complain that the spiders are always building the nest. I have, 7 IR cameras on the outside. And I haven't had a single problem. I just have to keep the dirt off of them. I get bugs every once in a while that fly or spiders that crawl over, but I haven't had a lot of the problems that a few people complain about. It sends the video and power over the same cable, which is nice. The downside is you have to do the home runs. The network cameras, both of these do power over Ethernet. So if you have a power over Ethernet switch, or you can also get power injectors. It makes things a lot easier. You can actually also tie in directly to one of these. You don't have to, say, go through ZoneMinder. I'll show you ZoneMinder real quick. ZoneMinder does motion. You can hook all your analog cameras up to it. You can do all networks. So setup's pretty quick. You'll click Add, which gives you, say, this number 2. You select, you give it a name, you tell it, is it a local, are you using a capture card, or is it a network, what type of mode, you just want to monitor it, you want to do capture the video when there's motion, you always want to record it, you want to record it plus tag when there's motion, or just do nothing. You can set how many maximum frames at different times, and then, if it's a network camera, you specify the IP, you specify the location to get the video image. If it's a capture card, you put dev video 0 and you select which channel it's on. Both of them, you set the resolution, and that's pretty much it. If you go to a camera, the first thing you have to do is you have to set up a zone. So it brings up the camera image. You can click on different corners. Oh. All right. Can I scroll this down? So you can, if you only want to track certain areas, you can, you know, build a region. Like if I just wanted to watch or look at the door, I'm not going to be able to pull that. That goes off the screen. You can, did I miss it? So ZoneMinder does have a nice GUI. ZoneMinder can be set up so when it detects stuff, it can send signals out to X10 devices or to your own custom scripts. So you can say, you know, if there's motion in this area, notify my Crestron system that something's happened and flash the lights. Let's see, going back to this, you can choose your preset. The best, if you choose the fast, it does percentage of area. If you go to best, it actually tries to detect regions, blobs, as they call it, and you can set all the information here. You can add more points if you need, you know, more points to click on. And the best way to set these up is you get somebody at a far location, you click, let me get out of this, force alarm, which forces an alarm situation. And you have people move, you're like, okay, thanks, you can cancel the alarm. Then you go back into, well, the resolution's being difficult. Anyway, you can actually go back in and look at all of your frames. I really wish I could do this. Ah, here we are. So here's a list of all the events. So this will replay it. This was when I was messing around with stuff earlier, it looks like. If you click on stills, it will highlight the frames in red. Actually, I don't have it turned on. Normally, it'll highlight the frames. Oh, here we are. So here it's detecting things that have changed. And if you can click on stats, up pops a window that says, hey, I noticed pixel brightness difference of 66. 43% of the frame was moving. Once I filtered it, I got this. So basically, you have somebody at the back moving as much as you can. You find out what these values are, shrink them down just a little bit more, and that's how you properly calibrate your different zones. You can add multiple regions in one picture if you have something further off and you want it to be more sensitive versus something that's closer. There is a lot of time that it takes to get these set right, especially if you're outdoors, because cloud cover will come and it'll create false events. So do realize that there is quite a bit of setup that has to be done. Or you can go and purchase, you know, your pre-made. Windows has a lot better choices for motion detection than Linux does. This Linux motion detection does not work if you have pre-programmed pan-tilt zoom cameras that are always moving. This won't work with it. Windows has software that does. There is software on them that tries to detect movement. I haven't played around with it. I actually just picked up this camera last week, and it has that feature, and I haven't played around with it, so unfortunately I can't comment. Anyway, any other questions? Okay.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net. So head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.